Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Shane McMahon gets his heat back. Sami Zayn continues to fade. And Roman Reigns goes on a hunt for his mystery attacker. Your full SmackDown Live review starts right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. This is the SmackDown Live Review on this Wednesday, August 7th, 2019. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me, and good show to tune into today. A lot to talk about, a good SmackDown Live, really a good week of WWE programming in general. I don't have a ton to bitch about, and I love that, and it's not a massive improvement, but just simplicity, I think, is the key. Just being able to go back to basics of what these shows are is just night and day. When you step away from the entertainment and trying to be something you're not and focus on what you are, and that's a wrestling show, whether WWE wants to hide from their true identity or not, that's what they are at their core. And when they go back to it, it just always feels better. It feels more complete. It's easier to watch. It's more fun to watch. And so that's what WWE at least has, in my estimation, done for the last couple of days. We'll see if that continues into the NXT TakeOver weekend and, of course, your SummerSlam pay-per-view that airs Sunday. And tomorrow, I'll be joined by my co-host Ashley as we go over the full weekend wrestling and give our full preview and predictions for the SummerSlam card, which has a lot to discuss. Because what scares me about this card from top to bottom is the potential unpredictability. Because on the surface, many of these matches look like slam dunks, which scares the hell out of me. Because anytime that there's a card that looks this predictable, for the majority, not every match is a slam dunk in my mind, but a lot of them are, there's a lot of things that can happen. And Vince McMahon loves to throw a fly in the ointment and provide a curveball when you think a fastball is coming. And that could very well be what's going to happen this Sunday. I do have some pretty interesting thoughts as I finalize my predictions and overall preview of the show. So definitely tune in tomorrow. It's going to be a longer show than my solo shows are, but that's the way that normally goes on the co-host days. But I love it because sometimes they're upwards of 2 hours plus, but I don't think that's a bad thing. When you have good chemistry with all of your co-hosts and you have good topics to talk about and you have smart co-hosts and love that love wrestling just as much as you, it makes it super easy to do. So I'm very much looking forward to it. And as I mentioned yesterday, my schedule next week is a bit wonky. You guys know, I'll be traveling out west next week for 3 nights. So what I'm going to be doing is, and just as a reminder, I won't be doing a Sunday show. That show is going to be moved to Monday. So your wrestling nostalgia is actually going to be on a Monday, late Monday night. I normally don't record Mondays, but Sunday's kind of my preparation day and making sure I have everything. And it's just going to be chaotic. So I'm going to be doing that show for you guys. Again, I'm a Pacific time now. Will be a later show Monday for my wrestling nostalgia. And then it'll be my typical Tuesday Raw review. Wednesday will be my SmackDown Live review, and then Thursday I won't be able to record, so I may be juggling my co-host or just skipping a week of co-hosts for next week. I'm not sure yet. It's a little bit up in the air. I'm currently working that out in my mind of how exactly that's going to work, but you will have a minimum of 3 shows next week, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to get you guys audio as best I can, so it's going to be a blast. It's going to be a blast. All right. One more thing, guys. By the way, if you haven't checked out the website, I know many of you have. We have visitors that are growing by the week, and I appreciate that very much. Check it out, though. I have some great contributors and authors that publish their thoughts on the current product and some NXT topics, and it's some very well-written articles that I would recommend you check out. It's in the opinions section. Also featured on the homepage, and every podcast is there, and you can support the show. And all you have to do is click on the support the show tab, and there's an Amazon banner. All you got to do is click on that banner that's in the support the show tab, and any shopping you do on Amazon will be immediately credited a small percentage back to the show. Just do your shopping as normal. No hidden fees, nothing like that. It's just do what you normally do on Amazon. But start with the WWE podcast, and it's a free way to help the show. Thank you so much for that. And also, if you haven't already checked me out on CastBox, by the way, I know that that's a huge up-and-coming app for podcasting. Check us out on CastBox. There's a random feed out there, by the way, just so you guys know. It's the WWE podcast. It's me. But I'm somehow duplicating a feed with WordPress. And WordPress is what I use to manage my website. So I don't know how I'm duplicating the feed. I don't know if it's through my podcast distributor where my feed originates, or if it's through WordPress itself. I don't know. But just ignore the WordPress logo. I'm trying to figure out where the hell it came from. I honestly don't know. So just pay attention to the normal logo. Anyway, guys, let's dive into wrestling. Let's dive into SmackDown Live, which, again, I thought was a very good show. I thought it was a show that was concise. It had meaning, purpose, and direction. It had direction and good pacing overall. I mean, I really don't have a ton to complain about here with SmackDown Live. It was just a solid wrestling show. It kept the comedy garbage to a minimum. It focused on some serious angles. And Roman, of course, opens and closes the show, even though he's not in the WWE title picture or World Heavyweight Championship or the Universal Heavyweight Championship picture. Don't worry. They still find a way to make sure that Roman is the focus, even if he's not competing for the top belt or belts. Interesting how that works, right? So they may not have him in the top spot, but they wink, wink, still have him in the top spot. Yeah, he's not in the title picture, but he's still our focus. It's just so maddening sometimes. But I'm enjoying the angle right now with Joe essentially turning babyface on Monday Night Raw and having Roman do a sit-down interview. That was very well done. It was in a tone that I haven't heard Roman Reigns in a long time. I think since that snowed in January before or after the Rumble where Roman Reigns was facing Brock Lesnar for the first time before WrestleMania 31. That was the best that I've seen Roman. And the way I say that is, it's not that he had passion or he had a fiery promo. He just felt more authentic and real. The way he looked, the way he spoke, it just felt clearer, and not so much that he's in a fog, just kind of going through the motions, acting like he'd rather be anywhere else but where he's at. It felt real and authentic, and I think that's what separated us from the typical Roman Reigns persona. And I enjoyed it. He's talking about how much it's affecting him being able to provide for his family, someone's coming after his career, his health, and also publicly apologizing to Samoa Joe very authentically, not in a sarcastic kind of way, in a way that would say, Roman's being genuine here. Roman is being very real to Samoa Joe here. And that would immediately turn Joe babyface. I think that that has solidified that angle, that turn, that Joe is indeed now a babyface. Again, I say that with words of caution, because Joe could still be behind it. Even if he's not the driver, he could be the accomplice. It's still possible. I wouldn't say it's likely now. I would say that there's a small chance of this, that it's just a swerve, and Joe is the mastermind behind all of this, and he's not necessarily the actual hitman, right? He's the guy that hired the hitman. So it's possible Joe is still the mastermind. We will see. I still believe it's probably not Joe, and we'll get into that. But so Roman Reigns, the one critique I would have about that whole angle last night was Roman Reigns bursting into the men's locker room at the end of the night and demanding everybody leave. Who the hell is he? There was, 10, 15 guys in there at the time, and I didn't get a look at everybody that's there, but is everyone just supposed to bow down to the request of Roman Reigns? And it wasn't even said or asked nicely. It was, hey, guys, get out of here. I want to talk to Bud. It was very demanding. It was very disrespectful. Again, it's tone deaf for the fans that just continue to not connect with Reigns, because he's this still too cool for school guy that just is. He's like the jock at school that walks around. He doesn't have a big mouth, but he's got this quiet but almost just saturated arrogance about him when he walks down the hall. He's just like that douchebag that you know. He's trying to act too cool, and he's good at what he does, but he still comes off like a douchebag. It's just unfortunate. And I know it's a small thing, because I enjoyed the other 90% of the segment that had to do with this whole angle, but you can't have Roman come in and just demand the whole locker room leave. The locker room is sacred ground. It's where you have hazing back in the day. It's where a lot of learning takes place. You have to earn your keep in the locker room, literally. There's a lot that is sacred about a men's locker room, particularly in sports and particularly in professional wrestling. And you're going to have Roman Reigns come in and just act like he's the, high chief and just demand everyone leave. If he had just come in and said that, hey guys, I just want your attention. Would you guys mind giving us a minute? That's how you approach it, instead of just him coming in, basically kicking in the door and telling everyone what to do. It's so tone deaf to do that. It's a small thing, but it's one of those things that adds up and is just put it in the pile. Just keep adding it up. It's a little bit piece by piece of tearing down this Roman Reigns babyface character, right? So anyway, he interrogates Buddy Murphy, and Buddy initially denies it and then tells Reigns that even if I did know, I wouldn't tell you. To which Roman Reigns punches him in the face and then throws him across the table and then puts his arm up against his neck. And Buddy Murphy spits out that he saw Rowan there that night that the forklift was tipped the crates and scaffolding on him. So at the conclusion of SmackDown, of course, it ends with Reigns somehow, some way. You have Rowan and Daniel Bryan standing in the ring after they were disqualified in their tag team match with the New Day. And Rowan is standing there, didn't make a face to confirm yes or no. It's a bit of, I will say this, if it is Rowan, it's kind of a letdown. And look, it's just that Rowan hasn't connected. And maybe this is the big attempt and their big push to try to make something happen with Rowan. But Rowan is as big as he is and as wacky of a look as he has. He's very unique looking. He was the third wheel, the forgotten third wheel of the Wyatt family.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
He became semi-relevant with Daniel Bryan, but he was lost. Lost in the herd of sheep that he liked to portray when he was with Luke Harper. I mean, he was still the second fiddle to Luke Harper. And again, he joined Daniel Bryan and became the most relevant that he has in a very long time from a rub standpoint and from the standpoint of booking him as a real legitimate monster that you could kick out of finishes and had a decent finishing maneuver. I mean, they put him in a position to reestablish and reeducate who and what Rowan is, but as soon as they got mic time, WWE pulled the rug out from them, and the momentum and all the steam just was taken out of the sails of the Planets Tag Team Champions that I think were stripped of the belts way, way too soon, and their livelihood lived and thrived and grew on the mic, particularly with Daniel Bryan, who hasn't been able to say a word in about a month. It's unfortunately hurting not just Rowan at this point, but Daniel Bryan. You know, the guy that we never thought we'd see again, came back from a concussion. All of that, it's so quickly forgotten. So, but Rowan is the suspect right now. It kind of feels like a big letdown, like Rikishi when he ran down Stone Cold. You were hoping it was somebody more of a top status, a top guy. But if it's Rowan, okay, that's something new. I guess that's the positive, that it's a new matchup, as WWE thinks that's the solution to all their problems, is just new matchups. That's like their go-to. Oh, the fans have seen this. They need something new. That's the problem. Yeah, well, no. I mean, I've explained this before. It's not the end-all, be-all problem. That's a symptom of the true problems, which I'm not going to get into because it'll be one big bitch fest. So I just think if Rowan's going to do this and they're going to go with Rowan, I'm along for the ride. If it is indeed Rowan, I'm along for the ride. We all need to just give it a minute, let it breathe. Let's see what Rowan's got. And if it's successful, there's a big upside here of being able to create a new monster, a new big heel, and having somebody new in that mix in the upper echelon of the roster is never a bad thing. So let's see where this goes. Maybe Daniel Bryan is indeed the mastermind behind it and Rowan was the accomplice. I mean, there's a lot of different things you could do here. Whatever their motivations are, I have no idea. I mean, if Daniel Bryan is the true mastermind and it's going to end up revealing itself as such, I guess Daniel Bryan could point to 2015 when he was eliminated from the Rumble and there was all that controversy and they faced each other one-on-one at, I think it was Roadblock, and Roman ended up beating him, which derailed Daniel Bryan's hopes and dreams of being champion again. And I know we got a consolation prize of Daniel Bryan winning the IC title that year. And so there's something he could pull from if indeed they want to go to the Daniel Bryan road. I just have no idea what Rowan's motivations would be for trying to not just take out Roman Reigns, but end his career. I mean, try to run him down. Like, I mean, this has got to be a very, very in-depth reasoning, very deep reasoning for someone to want to do this. At least I hope so. I hope that's what they end up portraying and presenting to the audience. So, All right. Well, so I enjoy the Roman Reigns angle overall, but I want to move on, and that's the Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens KO show. And this was a segment that needed to happen. And what I mean by that is, for, 4 weeks straight, Shane McMahon got stunned multiple times a night. Kind of took the interest out of you wanting to see Kevin Owens get his hands on Shane McMahon and beat the holy hell out of him. It's fun to watch the first couple times. And then it's just the law of diminishing returns that takes effect, right? And you have KO out there with Shane McMahon, and you're like, well, if he stuns him, that'll be cool, but we've seen it. You know, so this was a segment that was needed for the storyline's sake. Because you needed to feel that need, that desire, that want to see Kevin Owens get his hands on Shane McMahon again and beat the hell out of him. And that's what we got. That's what we needed. That's what we got. That's how I felt. I thought this was a successful segment. Did it blow me away? No, it didn't. But it wasn't designed to. It was designed exactly the way it should have been. And that is Kevin Owens coming out there and calling out Shane for not putting his career on the line. But Shane said, you offered that up. I didn't ask you to do that. And now you've done it. Why would I do that? And smart. I mean, that was kind of like the babyface or the heel outsmarting the babyface, which is never a good thing. But it was a true line by Shane and kind of made Kevin Owens look like an idiot for a moment there. But ended in a little bit of physicality, and they threw all their stuff out of the ring and acted like they were going to go toe-to-toe, and you knew immediately that Shane was going to have something up his sleeve, whether it was McIntyre or whether it was Elias. Ended up being Elias, who came to the aid of Shane and gets a stunner for his troubles on top of the announce table. And then from there is where Shane saw his moment of opportunity, swept the leg of Owens, and then, you know, had his punches in bunches, as Corey Graves loves to label it as such. And then Shane McMahon tipped the announce table on Kevin Owens, pinning him perfectly. It was actually very well placed. I mean, you couldn't have done that better to make it look real as possible. And it was well done. And having Shane trap Owens and then continue to wail on his head and then put a chair on his head and do a semi coast to coast on his head with the chair. That was well done. Well done with Shane also screaming in his face. Just good stuff. Good stuff made me want to see Kevin Owens get his revenge on Sunday. Mission accomplished. I think you could have had a few more weeks of this. You could have had a few more weeks of Shane McMahon getting his heat built and built and built. And that's, to me, how you should build most stories. Most. Didn't say all. Most. Because when you have everyone when you have your heels with no heat and it gets blown off as soon as it gets put on, what's the interest in people wanting to purchase the network to see it? You've already seen it. You've already seen it on free TV. Why would you give it away on free TV? And WWE's philosophy of need to put smiles on people's faces is coming back to bite them in the ass because they are not allowing heels to get true, real, long, just frustrating heat. And when they don't allow it to simmer and build, it creates less desire for us to see a babyface on a journey and get behind him or her to see them get their revenge on the heel because it happens so quickly. And one perfect example, really one of the last times I can remember, at least the one that pops in my head, of a long-term, real nice heat-building angle, believe it or not, is Shawn Michaels versus Vince McMahon. Believe that or not. I think that was WrestleMania 22. And it had, might have been 23, 22 or 23. And it started with Shawn Michaels telling Vince McMahon to, I think it was something along the lines of let it go, or move on, rather. I think he said he told Vince to move on from the Bret Hart saga, the whole screw job in Montreal. And since that time, I think that happened in like January or early February, and Vince McMahon, week after week after week after week, continued to get the one up on Shawn Michaels. I mean, it was so frustrating. But at the same time, you were so invested in behind Michaels that by the time WrestleMania rolled around, it was just so satisfying to see Vince McMahon finally get Sweet Chin Music. I mean, HBK did get a couple of punches in on Vince, but it wasn't what you wanted. It wasn't the finish move. It wasn't that blow off. If you guys remember this angle in the build, you know what I'm talking about. I love that kind of feeling. I love that anger that I feel because it makes me invest. It makes me think about and fantasize about when that babyface finally gets that heel, he's going to tear him apart. You want to see him just get him torn apart. And that's how I felt with Michaels and Vince. I mean, I'm telling you, go back to the build. There's not one week that Shawn Michaels got the one up and got the shine or the made people smile. Okay. It was very well built. Very well built. I'm telling you, I think it happened like 7 weeks in a row of Vince just continuing to outsmart or play the numbers game with Shawn Michaels. It was beautiful. Beautiful when I think about it. And we got the payoff. We got the payoff at WrestleMania when Shawn beat the holy hell out of Vince McMahon, did a spot off the ladder while Vince McMahon was in a trash can, hit Sweet Chin Music, tied or handcuffed Shane McMahon to the ring post so he couldn't interfere and made him watch as he beat the hell out of his dad. I mean, it was beautiful stuff. Great stuff. Loved it. Loved it. And I believe that was one of the last WrestleMania Shane was involved in before he left and came back 7 years later. So that's the kind of stuff that is missing from today. And we have, I think the closest thing right now is Brock Lesnar getting a one-up and the best of Seth Rollins for 2 weeks in a row. And now you want to get behind Seth. You rallying behind Seth. You're rallying behind his desire, his heart. That's what babyfaces need to show is heart, desire, a genuine love for what they do. Who doesn't admire those traits? Who doesn't admire that? That's smart booking. Psychology. It's human psychology. Basic. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. And so this was an angle that had to absolutely happen. If Kevin Owens had gotten the stunner again and left, I mean, it would have been like, all right, well, cool. I guess, you know, we'll just see that on Sunday. It'd be a match that we're not really looking forward to. And many of you were like probably saying, I'm not looking forward to it anyway. And from a quality standpoint, I understand your concerns. At the same time, sometimes it's not about all about having a five-star match. People are so concerned these days in the 2019 version of professional wrestling of having a five-star match, of making sure that they get the craziest spots and the craziest kickouts and the flash that goes with wrestling and who can do the most athletic reversal or athletic move or how many times can someone spin off of a top rope? Can they do a 1080? I mean, it's getting to the point where it's almost not even wrestling anymore. It's kind of just Broadway. And I don't like that. I like a little bit more of the true athletic competition feel. That's what is missing. If you want to talk about a problem, a true problem, not a symptom, as I alluded to earlier, a true sports-like competitive feel. That is one of the things that is missing from WWE that over the last 5+ years, or more, you could argue, but since the ratings have really been plummeting, you could correlate that with, in part, to more focus on entertainment, bad comedy, and unbelievable matches. And when I say unbelievable, I don't mean like really good. I mean take you out of the moment of believability matches where it's just you see these moves and stuff and there's no selling. There's no selling. It's just you hit your spot, I hit my spot. You go down, I go down. Oh, okay, now it's time for the false finish, the comeback, the baby face shine. The heel gets his heat back, and then we go to the finish. And at the end of the match, no one's hurt. They're all just breathing hard, but no one's actually selling anything. There's no selling. It's just everyone breathing hard, which they should be. I mean, my God, the cardiovascular shape you have to be in to do this is off the charts. So breathing hard is a piece of it. Where's the selling? Does anyone even understand what selling is in 2019? I think if selling became a regenerated piece of wrestling, that wrestling interest would go up. Because it is a integral, it is a critical, it is a key element of people getting invested in stories. Because if you can't sell it, guess what people aren't going to do? They're not going to buy it. And if they're not buying it, they don't care about it. And if they don't care about it, they're not going to invest their money in it or emotions, ultimately money, because they're a business. That's why it's called selling. You have to make the audience at home and in the arena believe what you're doing is real while you're doing it. Get them engaged. Make them feel what you're feeling. And that's how you bring people along in the story, by taking their own emotions and using it against them or for them, depending on what you're trying to do and what role you're playing. You need to use the human emotion to get people, your customers, your fans, invested in the story you're trying to tell, to ultimately get them invested in the product, which brings in more revenue, because then they're purchasing the network, they're purchasing t-shirts, they're saying, hey, I can relate to him or her. And if you can't do that, you're just putting on a stunt show. Do people get emotionally invested in stunts? Does anybody get emotionally invested in stunts? No. No, they're like fireworks. It's, oh, cool. Oh, I want to see the next one. Cool. Oh, I want to see, oh, I want to see the next one, the next one, the next one. You don't get emotionally invested in stunts. So that's what's missing. We're all about telling stories, and that's true. And yes, the announcers are a piece of being able to do that and are responsible for being able to do that and fill in the gaps. Of course, they're a key part of it. And I think Corey Graves and Michael Cole do a very good job. I really do. Renee is coming along too. I know people are ripping on Renee, but I actually think that she's improving. She just has to stick with it, have tunnel vision, ignore people that are destroying her on Twitter, okay, and social media. That's just the nature of being on social media. Just what it is. I think eventually she will fit right in like a glove. It's just going to take time. But the majority of what is told, the story that is told, is not told through words. It's by emotions. It's by what you see. It's by what you hear from the wrestlers in the ring. The grunting. The trash talk. The yelling. The slapping. Simulating people being hit. And what does that do when you're able to sell and tell a story that makes sense? It engages the audience that is live. And when they're engaged and they're engaged when they're live, it creates a better presentation for the people at home. And the majority of your audience is at home. 99.9% of them every week are at home. So you're not really placating to the people in the audience. You're trying to use them as a tool to embellish your product to make them want to come to the live events. It's a vicious cycle, but it's a business. I'm not trashing them. That's a good business model. But how you use them as a tool is to create emotion from them, which then in turn makes them create noise, which makes it seem like a cool environment, an emotional environment, a loud environment, an exciting environment. Where does it all start? Storytelling and selling. That's it. Of course, there's a lot more to it. But I think that fundamental of selling, which is storytelling, is a lost art that needs to be brought back. It needs to be brought back in a big way. And I think it can make a huge difference in the WWE product. Huge. And professional wrestling in general. This is actually not just limited to the WWE promotion. It's really not. I mean, I've seen some of the AEW stuff, and as good as they're doing, I think, so far, and that they're trying to make a mark for themselves and differentiate themselves from WWE as the alternative, I think as a whole, in the world, like on this earth, that selling in professional wrestling, whatever promotion you're in, doesn't matter, big, small, middle, high school gyms, whatever, selling is overlooked and underestimated and underutilized. I'm not saying you have to oversell everything, okay? A neck breaker, if you get a neck breaker or a clothesline, you don't need to sell it like you just got decapitated. There's a fine line. It takes time. It takes a long time to understand how to exactly sell certain moves, and depending on how big your opponent is, how to sell that move. Lots of variables. But, all right, I went way, way off topic from SmackDown Live, but I wanted to bring that to everyone's attention. I think that selling is extremely underutilized and could be brought back and make a huge difference in today's product. Okay, well, moving on to an additional SmackDown Live happening was Ali versus Dolph Ziggler. And that one, while it wasn't a long match, was one that was to set up Ziggler as strong as possible. And it's just, and I know that even before that, it was actually Rey Mysterio who was supposed to go up against Ziggler, and Rey Mysterio ended up getting assaulted on his way to the ring, and Ziggler hit a super kick, two super kicks actually, and then trash Goldberg, and then you have Ali come out, and Ali gets beaten. The general rule is, if you have a high profile match for the pay-per-view that's coming up, especially the week before the go home, you will automatically win your match. It's automatic. It is a slam dunk. Take it home. Take it to the bank. You win. And that's what happened here. Ali got beat by Ziggler with the super kick. Yay. It's a finish. Because that's exactly what it is. It's a knockout shot. So that was good stuff too. Natalya versus Ember Moon. I know that. So Natalya started off pretty strong. She eventually overpowered Ember Moon and didn't last too long either. This one ended with Ember being put in the sharpshooter on the ringside floor, and the ref calls for the 3 count, or the 10 count rather, ending in a double count out. Bayley comes out to pull Natalya off Ember Moon, but Natalya won't let go, so Bayley ends up shoving her down and then checks on Ember. Natalya gets in Bayley's face and then shoves her into the barrier and storms off. So Natalya is just on a shoving spree this week between shoving Trish, shoving Bayley, and then walking away. That's just apparently what Natalya is doing this week, is shoving people. And I didn't particularly like Bayley here interfering to help Ember Moon. I guess my only thought as a babyface of why you would do that is you don't want any excuses if you beat your opponent that, she was softened up by Natalya, you know. But why? I mean, these two have been nailing each other the last few weeks with their finish, and all of a sudden Bayley comes out and wants to be a hugger again. I don't understand it. And there are people who are actually battling me on Twitter that Bayley's popularity in terms of getting cheered, not overall popularity of awareness, I'm talking about her being successful, being cheered as a babyface, because that's your goal, is declining rapidly to the point where when she comes out, it's starting to get a little bit quiet. And you don't hear massive boos, okay? I'm not saying people are necessarily booing the hell out of her. That's not the case. I mean, just use your ears on SmackDown. But there's just little reaction for the SmackDown Women's Champion. You forget that she's a SmackDown Women's Champion. I don't have an emotional connection with Bayley. I really don't. I know I'm a man, she's a woman. Doesn't mean I still can't feel something. I felt something for Becky. Boy, it sounds like I'm like in love with these women. I'm not. It means like they're characters, okay? It means that I don't feel a connection with her character. I don't feel the need to cheer her. Bayley's got kind of this swagger and arrogance about her that is not endearing anymore. Just as Becky is, I think, facing that adversity right now in a much bigger way. So I didn't understand Bayley's need to come out and help Ember. I guess she's the sympathetic babyface, but why are you trying to help your opponent? Just didn't make a whole lot of sense. Okay. Moving on, Aleister Black versus Sami Zayn. This one, you already knew where it was going. I mean, Aleister Black, who I am a fan of, I like his promos. He feels different. He looks different. He's got a cool entrance. And Sami Zayn seems to be yesterday's news, at least in the eyes of management. Again, tell me the last time Sami Zayn won a match that was a singles match. Hell, tell me the last time he won a match, period. The only one I can think of since he returned as the critic of the critics was his tag match with Kevin Owens at, what, a couple of pay-per-views ago? He ended up getting a victory. That's it. That's it. Sami Zayn lost decisively here to a very good-looking Black Mass, the roundhouse kick by Aleister Black. Very good. I mean, boy, I wouldn't want to take that because one miscue, I'm sure there's still some small contact with his boot to his face, and there's no protection there. Yeesh. It's such a good-looking finisher, and it makes sense, but it's one I wouldn't want to take. Again, let's just put it like that. But the big story here is Sami Zayn, not even Aleister Black. It's Sami Zayn's continued descent and WWE's decision to take it off SummerSlam instead of even putting it on the pre-show. Didn't understand that. I guess they have other plans for Aleister Black at SummerSlam, who is clearly the focus here with Sami Zayn losing so decisively. And it's a damn shame. It's a damn shame because I think Sami Zayn is extremely underutilized. I think Sami Zayn is one of the best talkers in WWE, period. I really believe that. Sami Zayn is so good on the mic. And he's so good in the ring. Right now, it's just the flavor of the week for Vince McMahon. I really feel like that's what it is with Aleister Black. And again, I like Aleister Black. I just feel for Sami at this point. Okay, then we get another just Shelton Benjamin interview that had his eyes looking around again. This has been going on for, a month? And he was asked if he would ever compete for the 24/7 championship. Shelton kind of looks like he's in deep thought and then says, well, and he walks off. Is this supposed to be funny? I don't know what this is. Maybe that's the point, but it's actually to the point now where we've seen it so many times that I don't even care anymore. Because you know it's not going to be anything big. Because it's Shelton Benjamin in 2019. It wouldn't have been big with Shelton Benjamin in 2009 versus 2019, much less 10 years later. So I think it's a whole bunch of nothing. I think it's a whole bunch of nothing. I really do. And it's just Vince McMahon thinking, that's so funny. I mean, you can hear it. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. I don't know. We got a new Firefly Funhouse of Bray Wyatt. He walked up to the pig puppet and the puppet looked like he just ate a ton of candy. And Bray says that he loves the pig and loves to stuff his face with sugary snacks to cover up his insecurities. And he's afraid that Finn's courage is just ignorance in disguise. Bray then points out that Finn invited the fiend to his doorstep willingly. Yowie, wowie. And Bray says it's Finn's turn to hurt and the fiend is coming for him. Bray says, let me in, and then the screen switches to a clip of him in his fiend mask. So, I love the Firefly Funhouse. I would like to see Bray out in the ring as this Mr. Rogers, evil Mr. Rogers, and then have him kind of tease a metamorphosis when people piss him off into the fiend, saying, you know, you don't want to have him come out. And I think it would be a good transition. He doesn't always have to be the fiend on live TV. I wouldn't mind seeing the evil Mr. Rogers. And again, I will say this again tomorrow night probably too. If WWE believes that Bray Wyatt is going to get booed at SummerSlam, if he didn't get booed against Kurt Angle attacking him in his own hometown, good luck. I mean, good luck if you believe that Bray Wyatt's going to get booed. It's just silly. People love this character. They're interested in it. It's genuinely frightening. The mask is genuinely frightening. It's a original character. It's somewhat of a callback to his old, but with his, I don't like his maniacal laugh because it's flashbacks to the just riddles he would pose backstage every single week and then laugh maniacally and it would go off the air. I mean, it's just, I don't like that piece of it just because it gives me bad flashbacks. But overall, this is a very well done character. Bray is all in, and I don't see how Finn wins this. I don't believe it's the demon versus the fiend. And I think the reason for that is they want to keep the demon character protected and not just offer it up to the fiend, at least at this time. Maybe if they have a follow-up match that they could bring out the demon and have a fiend versus demon match. Maybe. Okay. Then we got backstage where Elias is getting in Chad Gable's face about leaving his stuff in Elias's dressing area, and Elias makes some jokes about Gable's height and then grabs the guitar and walk off. He was talking about his height. And again, this is, to me, this screams Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon, who loves to have this kind of inferiority complex where if you don't meet the 6'2", 250 minimum height and weight to ride this ride, that you will get shamed on live television. Yeah, we'll do it. Well, we'll do it in storylines. So that's, you know, people don't know that's how I actually feel. Well, yeah, it is. I mean, how many times have we seen this? They wailed on Alexa Bliss for how long about how short she was. They wail on Kevin Owens using wrestlers like conduits as conduits to speak their Vince McMahon's true feelings on when people are have a larger abdomen than the six pack. It's so Vince McMahon-esque, isn't it? And Chad Gable isn't even that much smaller than Elias. I think he's in better shape than Elias. And Chad Gable stands there like he got, you know, the chocolate milk poured on him in front of his high school. Couldn't stand up for himself. A guy that competed in true amateur wrestling can't stand up for himself against Elias, who just got his ass kicked by Kevin Owens a segment before. I mean, it just took the heart out of my interest in Chad Gable. I mean, while his hair grew out, did his balls grow smaller? I don't know. But I did not enjoy Elias basically neutering Chad Gable backstage. And while this may end up in a match, why can't he just stand up for himself a bit? I don't understand. Come back with a line that just is like, hey, Elias, what did I just watch, you know, 10 minutes ago? Did you just get your ass kicked by Kevin Owens? I mean, there's ways to do it, but okay. And then obviously we got the Xavier Woods and Big E versus Daniel Bryan and Rowan. The winners were the via DQ were Big E and Xavier after Rowan used the stairs against Big E and Xavier, and it caused the DQ, which then led to Roman backstage being the big jock, the king of the jocks, the locker room leader, as some perceive him. And that's what led to the final of the show, the final segment of the show, obviously, which is what I discussed at the beginning. And so that was SmackDown Live. Oh, I mean, I did. Of course, I have critiques. Always have critiques. But I enjoyed it overall. I really did. I thought it was it got me more excited with seeing SummerSlam than I did coming into the show. And that's a good thing. We had video recaps of Kofi and Randy Orton. That was good. I didn't need an in-person interaction where they end up in a brawl and it's very predictable. It felt important to Kofi, and his words were very meaningful. It felt real. You know, they keep harping back on that 2009 match that they had, and Randy saying stupid, and it's, I remember that very well. I remember that match very well. I remember the Randy Orton calling Kofi stupid, and that was supposed to be the launching point, which wasn't. And I'm sure there actually were true backstage politics with Randy. I'm sure there were. There were. I would not be surprised. So, you know, overall, it was a show that got me more excited than I did coming in. All right. Some news coming out of this day, or actually night as I'm recording this, I'm reading some news that, and again, this is through a credible site, but it says that WWE SummerSlam will be taking place this Sunday, and the company was building towards a match between Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan. However, it seems the match will not be happening, according to a report by PW Insider, owing to the fact that WWE was unable to conclude the storyline between Roman and Reigns and Daniel Bryan. Their match will not be taking place at SummerSlam. Originally, the SummerSlam card was to have featured Reigns against Bryan, but the word making the rounds of TV last night was that the match will likely be dropped in order to let the current storyline play out. Again, the blame for the attacks on Roman Reigns fell on Rowan this past week. However, this direction is not concrete. It is expected that the two will continue to feud past SummerSlam, so they will have a match at a later pay-per-view. I'm fine with this. Okay, so it seems as if it is Daniel Bryan as the mastermind. If that is the case, then fine. You know what? And I respect the hell out of the fact that they're not rushing this. And they're letting the storyline play itself out. And not just put this match on a card because on paper it's SummerSlam worthy, but we don't really care about finishing the story because people don't really care. They just want to see these two go at it. No. I need a reason. I need a damn good reason that they are. I don't want to believe everything's just random, okay? I need a reason, and I think Daniel Bryan could point back to 2015. I think that's where he will start and say, you know, my career took a downturn as soon as I lost to Roman Reigns on whatever year it was, 2016, 2015. There's a way to spin it, and that's probably where he'll go. And so that'll be interesting to see if it is indeed Rowan and Bryan as the true assailants, mystery assailants of Roman Reigns. So that's interesting, though. But I respect the hell out of that. I respect the hell out of that. Some other weird things here. One kind of way off topic is Stone Cold talking about his stunner to Donald Trump at WrestleMania 23. And, oh boy, I remember that one. Stone Cold talked to the KFC show regarding that incident from 2007. He said, Vince was going to get shaved, so all of a sudden Vince comes to me and straight up there, this is his way. This is the way it's going to happen. We're back in the area. 90,000 people are out there in Ford Field, and he goes, Steve, come over here. I'm going to see if you can get Trump to take a stunner. And he said, oh, BS. You think he will? He goes, I know Donald, and he'll do it. So he said to Donald, come over here. And he goes, Steve, this is Donald Trump. Hey, Mr. Trump, how you doing? And he goes, listen, I was thinking about after everything is all said and done, Steve would hit you with his finish move. And that was that. I mean, so I mean, that's a very brief conversation. And it's hard to tell this over a podcast as far as who said what and where. Basically, it was Vince McMahon who called Donald Trump and asked him if it was okay if Stone Cold was able to deliver the stunner to him after the match. And Trump took it. I'm sure that there's a lot of people, particularly on the Democratic side, that would love to actually deliver the stunner to Trump. It's just kind of funny that Stone Cold has stunned the president of the United States. That's a fact. That's a fact. But I remember that stunner very well, and I loved it because I love when Stone Cold delivers stunners sometimes for no reason and they're unexpected on people you'd never ever see taking a stunner. It was taken almost as poorly as the Linda McMahon one. Almost. Linda McMahon is at the top of the list of just piss-ass poor stunners. I mean, just, she, yeah. It was painful to watch Linda McMahon being stunned. Painful. Donald Trump is a close second because it didn't even connect with him at all. Didn't connect with his jaw at all. It was just basically Donald Trump leaning over. And, I mean, there's a picture of it. And I remember it happening. And it was cool, but it was just not well executed on Donald Trump's behalf. If he had dropped to his knees, I think it would have been better instead of just leaning over and having him get a stunner. So it was quite an interesting day at the office, as Stone Cold would say. And I remember that very well with the Lashley versus Umaga match. And maybe I'll review that sometime too. Not at the top of my list, but that was certainly interesting in terms of the hair versus hair match. All right, well, guys, that's all I got for you today on the SmackDown Live portion of the show, review portion. Thank you so much for listening, and don't forget to like and subscribe, and also visit the website if you are so inclined, and click on that Amazon banner on support the show if you do any Amazon shopping. It really helps out the show, and I really appreciate all of you who have done that. It is a huge, huge help to keeping the show going and this free audio for you 4 times a week. So thank you so much. And don't forget, tomorrow I will be with Ashley going over the full week in WWE and also getting our full SummerSlam preview and predictions. So that's going to be a show that you don't want to miss. Check out patreon.com/WWE podcast if you want to get an ad-free experience of every single show for $1 a month. every single show for $1 ad free on that feed on Patreon. So check that out too. All right, guys, thank you again so much for listening. I'll talk to you next time.